in India altogether, I got dreadfully ill, really, really ill. And as a result, I decided to work in Greece this year and let Jeannie and Serini come meet me. So what we did here was to take a look at, and again, you know, you think about all the stuff that's been talked about, China this, China that. Well, let's look at these marginal areas. And in India, we're not talking about a marginal area. We're talking about a very important area. But in Greece, it's really a marginal area. Where it becomes interesting is in, if you look at our marketing opportunities for cotton from the U.S. around the world, and you think about an area like Turkey. Greece is the largest producer of cotton in Europe. It's about 80%. It's the sixth largest exporter in the world, and it's the second largest supplier of cotton to Turkey. So that's where our interest really comes, because when you look at where we're selling cotton other than China, Turkey is really the second largest market we have, and it's a developing market at that. It seems to be growing at least steadily, if not by leaps and bounds. It's at least a large marginal market after China, the first major market after China. But when you look at who's supplying that market, the Greece supply is heavily impacted by what happens to the common agricultural policy in Europe. Really, really heavily depends on what ends up after that debate. That's the 2013 period is now the sort of the public policy period for that change. It's going on in the midst of the crisis, which is real, to be sure. And where it's really real is in the southern states, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Greece. It's a severe problem, and the idea that the cap will... It's sort of like the U.S. foreign policy. It's come to a point now where, after all the talking and him hawing around, something really might happen. And it's happening not because of an enlightened consciousness on the part of the government, but rather on the purse strings of the government. Greece produces about 1.2 million bales of cotton. It exports about 1 million bales of cotton. Again, about half of that goes to Turkey. What it has as an advantage in a lot of cases is that it's able to sort of be the warehouse of cotton for Turkey textile mills, because they can call on them for small orders in a timely fashion. So it's sitting there supplying small demand at a time for these Turkish suppliers because of, the geographic relationship of the two countries. The U.S. currently has about 58% of the market share in Turkey, so that's 1.6 million bales, and we're talking about an additional potential of maybe a million bales, if you look at it, if you were able to capture it all. Greece also has an opportunity to supply Italy and Pakistan and some other countries, so there's opportunities there that would open up should Greece... production changed dramatically. So what we tried to do was exactly the same thing we've been doing in the other countries. We go in and we try to estimate the cost of production using these focus group discussions. We did this during the summer of 2012. We also worked with some university professors in the American Farm School in Thessaly, which is a very interesting place. It started after the Marshall Plan, but I'll talk about that to people that are interested in it. But it's a good spot if you're interested in European agriculture, especially southern region, to work with them. These are the two areas that we went. And Thessalian Plains is the largest producing area, and then the Central Macedonia area up closer to Greece and Bulgaria is the second largest area of production. Basically, that's about it. 75% of the cotton is produced in those two regions, so that's where we went to do the field visits. Very different from what you just saw in India. These are very sophisticated farmers. These are European farmers that are doing quite well, thank you. It's all the modern technology that you can see here in Texas or anywhere you go to in developed country, cotton farming, drip irrigation. Now, what I did find interesting is that they seem to be coming a little late to the party when it comes to agricultural extension. This in the left uppermost corner was a meeting we held in Thessaly area with a new agricultural extension office that was being opened there, and they were really enthusiastic about working with us to understand more about how we do extension programming. So there's an educational effort that's going on, but there's an institution of farming that's been there forever. This one farming village picture here is a group that it was one family's village, and all of them were farmers. They were it was really an interesting place, to be honest with you. They were mostly wheat, cotton, and some corn, but it was all one family, cousins, uncles, and what have you. It was real interesting. You see this bed of the pickup. We're trying to see their quarter mile pivot, which is out away. So they're, you know, they've got. It's not like India. It's more like High Plains. It's got everything that you would need in terms of technological adoption in terms of the most modern irrigation techniques and what have you. No BT cotton, though. That's the one difference I would suggest. The right low picture is a good example of what's going on over there. What they're doing is they divide their acreages or their holdings into plots. So you've got small plots of cotton grown next to small plots of durum wheat, next to small plots of corn. So it's a very fragmented segmentation of plantings, which sort of, you know, it's the way that they have evolved over time for a lot of different reasons. Part of it's response to government payments. That's probably going to change because they're getting away from commodity-specific payments to more decoupled payments. So this fragmentation into preserving your, you know, if you think of it in terms of wheat base or cotton base or corn base, that's sort of what you're seeing when you see all these fields cropped up like that. These are the numbers that we came up with in terms of the budgets. Again, some differences in the areas from the Greece averages, Macedonia and Thessaly. You got, as you'd expect, in the major regions, you've got a little bit higher yield than you do on average. In Macedonia, it's a little lower. Again, the thing to look at is the bottom line, where we look at market revenue and then government support and total revenue and gross profit. Because that's really what keeps cotton in the ground, is the relationship of the $375 per acre that keeps coming in there. What we did again was to use the representative farm models with Scimitar, looking at variability in prices and yields. And presently, Greek cotton farmers are paid about 750 euros per hectare, about $375 an acre, as a crop-specific payment. Like I said earlier, they're now in the process of making changes to the cap, or at least that's the direction of change. This is the year that they're debating on exactly what that change is going to look like. But I really think that if you believe what you read in terms of the constraints on specifically Southern Europe or Southern EU countries in terms of their ability to supplement what might come out of a national payment from the common ag policy, you're looking toward a system that's going to be severely constrained in terms of those payments going forward post 2013 on to Europe 2020, which is the next time they're supposed to revisit the policy. There are about three different policy options. One is to provide more equity in the distribution of direct payments between member states. So you've got You know, remember we used to have, what was it, the EU9 and the 15 and the 17. Now there's EU27. So they're trying to make a cap policy that doesn't throw all the money into France, but gives a little bit of the money to the other countries. And they're also trying to move, like we are, to a system that's more reliant on risk management tools. They're trying to simplify the instruments, trying to get more and more to a decoupled risk management sort of public-private partnership that the cap has not looked like since I've been working in this game. The other option is, again, more equity in the distribution of direct payments, but substantial change in their design, moving it more to green payments, tying it more to procedures in terms of how you produce relative to ecosystem benefit targets, things like that. Again, making it more regionally specific and trying to simplify things. And then the third option is to simply phasing out the direct payments in their current forms and instead trying to provide limited payments, reductions in those direct payments, and have them again tied to environmental goods, ecosystem benefits. And this is the option that we really took a look at for a couple of reasons. One is because if you study what's going on and you talk to the people as we did, it appears that they're really serious about reductions in these payments, and they're really serious about moving them away from crop-specific payments and getting them more into this ecosystem benefits payments idea. So that's what we looked at, was a simple question of what's this production going to look like if you no longer have that government support tied to what you're doing. Well, it's pretty stark. If you continue along the cap direct payments route, you've got a pretty rosy picture. In fact, you don't see any red in that stoplight. You take away the cap direct payments, and it's very difficult to make money in production agriculture and cotton in Greece. I don't know how much of this would generalize across other regions, other commodities, but in terms of what we're looking at here, it's really what keeps them doing what they're doing. Without it, they're going to have to switch either to another commodity or to doing something else. And you know, sometimes it's gratifying when what you do in the office is verified by what you hear in the field. And these are the numbers that come with those pictures. The baseline there, some of the debt income stream was $620 per acre. Without the payments, they lose $64 an acre. That's just is what it is. But we were, Jenny can back me up on this. We were sitting, in one of the pictures I showed earlier of the guys sitting around in the yard in the village that was one family's farming operations, and I asked the question, I think, well, what would you guys do if you didn't have the cap support payments? Every one of them at the same time. I think the question was, how much cotton would you plant without the... Nothing. I mean, it was like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. It was just nothing. And you know, so it's not, we're not making it up. They know it as much as we do, that without these support payments, they're going to have to find a different way to make a living. Doesn't mean they won't still be farming. It just means things are going to be done in a different way. They can't have 17 different crops growing in 20 hectare squares, which was gratifying, at least when we ran the numbers, to find out that what they were saying made a lot of sense. So they're, you know, shifting cropping patterns to be sure. If cotton drops out of the mix, I think the importance that we can see at it again is at the margin, it looks like we'll have more access to a growing market in Turkey, because if you look again at who's out there with the cotton to sell, it gets down to a few numbers. And we're already a big player in the Turkish market. So life is good until the policy changes. And farmers in I will say, are generally much better off during the crisis that's going on, at least where we were in Greece, all throughout the country, than what we saw with people that were struggling in small businesses in the city. So until policies changes, things are going to still be good on the farms out there. But once that policy changes, they're going to have to figure out a new way to do what it is they do. That's for sure. So thank you.